Hey, future doctors, thanks for tuning in to Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Angelica Bartholomew, and I'm a third-year medical student at Ohio University in Cleveland, and I'll be your host today. Genitourinary cancers might sound intimidating, but after today, you'll spot them faster than step one can throw painless hematuria at you. Today, we're covering high-yield GU cancers for step one and level one. We'll break things down by organ, go through key associations, and I'll ask you plenty of questions to help lock in the details. Pause as needed to think through your answers, and don't get discouraged if you do not know everything, because we're all here to learn. So we'll start off with kidney cancers. Do you guys happen to know what the most common adult renal cancer is? Good. It's renal cell carcinoma, specifically the clear cell type. And we often refer to this as RCC. This is a malignant epithelial tumor arising from the kidney tubules. It likes to present with classic triad of hematuria, palpable mass, and flank pain. However, pathoma likes to tell us that this is only actually all present together 10% of the time. Do you know if kidney cancer is more common in males or females? Good, it's males. Other risk factors include greater than 60 years of age, smoking, and loss of that VHL3P tumor suppressor gene. You can also see fever, weight loss, and paraneoplastic syndromes. So you see an elevation in EPO, which will present as polycythemia, and then also PTHRP, ACTH, and renin. So it likes to spread to the renal vein first, then the IVC, then to the lung or bones. Sometimes you may also see a left-sided varicocele. Do you know which lymph nodes are typically the first to be affected? Good, yeah, the retroperitoneal lymph nodes. Lymph node questions are pretty high yield on step one, so knowing which lymph nodes are affected first when they spread, that's a good thing to know for most cancers if you can store it in your brain. Histologically, we'll see for the clear cell, a clear cytoplasm, and this is clear because of glycogen and lipids. Just another thing to know, usually if the cancer presents unilaterally, it's probably not hereditary, right? With our hereditary tumors, you often see them bilaterally. With kidney cancer specifically, it presents unilaterally in the upper pole when it's just sporadic. Do you guys know what the most common renal tumor is in kids? Wilms tumor. Good, good. Do you know what syndrome is associated with the deletion of the WT1 tumor suppressor gene? So the acronym is WAGR, which is WAGR. That's how people call it. And it stands for Wilms tumor, aniridia, and genitourinary anomalies. And the R is range of developmental delays. How about the syndrome associated with the mutation in the WT2 gene cluster? This is a fan favorite of step one, guys. And we got the Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome. All right, moving just along, we'll go to bladder cancers. Do you guys know what the most common type of bladder cancer is in the US? Excellent, urothelial carcinoma. So this was originally called transitional cell, so you might see it referred to as both. Usually they'll put both in the stem or the answer choices. So this is a malignant tumor arising from the urothelial lining of the urinary tract. This includes the renal pelvis, ureters, bladder, and proximal urethra. When it affects just the bladder, we typically refer to it as lower tract. You'll hear people shorten as lower tract, but the full name is lower tract urothelial carcinoma. When it arises in the ureters or renal pelvis, it is considered upper tract, so upper tract urothelial carcinoma. Do you know the classic presenting symptom of any bladder cancer? Nice, yes, painless hematuria. And do you know what the most important risk factor is? Smoking, and this is by far the strongest risk factor. Others include aniline dyes. This is used in textile or rubber industries. And then we got our cyclophosphamide exposure, and then our phenacetin. So this is an old analgesic that's no longer used, but you'll still see it appear in questions and maybe people that were exposed to it many years ago. And then also chronic cystitis. So I found this mnemonic from first aid really helpful, and it's kind of funny, so it sticks. PSAC. So the P stands for phenacetin, and then the S stands for smoking, like we had talked about earlier. The A is for the aniline, and then C can be for cyclophosphamide or chronic cystitis. Do you guys know what is meant by field defect? So this means the entire urothelial lining has been exposed to carcinogens. So tumors can arise at multiple sites and tend to reoccur. Do you guys know what type of bladder cancer is associated with chronic irritation? Good. That is squamous cell carcinoma. One other high yield thing to know about squamous cell of the bladder is that a blood fluke, schistosoma hematobium, can lead to this kind of cancer. And these patients are often from either Egypt or the Middle East in the question stem. A random little thing, if you can store it in your brain, is bladder adenocarcinoma. So super rare, and it makes sense because the bladder normally doesn't have glands. But if it does occur, it typically arises in the dome. So that's a really nice question they can throw at you. And it's the urochial remnants that cause this kind of cancer. All right, we're going to move on to prostate cancer. And if you guys haven't already listened to it, we do have an episode on prostate cancer that goes way in way more detail than what I'm going to go into today. So if you're curious or you have an upcoming exam, I would definitely check it out. So, do you guys know what the most common type of prostate cancer is? Adenocarcinoma. Good. This is a malignant gland-forming tumor that typically arises in the posterior peripheral zone of the prostate. This is something that will be noted again later on throughout the remainder of the podcast. Do you guys know what patients are at the highest risk? Good. So there's a couple things here. So older age, obviously it's pretty rare in people before 50. I just saw a statistic recently that said that about 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. So this affects a lot of people. African American men are at highest risk for prostate cancer and also more aggressive disease. So definitely, paying attention to that when you are screening patients. And then those with a positive family history. So depending on the age of the person in the family, when they were diagnosed, that's like kind of when you start screening in that patient. How does it usually present? Good. So if you remember what I said earlier about this being relevant, it often is actually asymptomatic because I said it's in that posterior peripheral zone. So you really usually only detect it by screening. So that could be an elevated PSA or the abnormal digital rectal exam. But if a patient is symptomatic, it would present similar to benign prostatic hyperplasia, BPH. So you'll see some urinary obstruction signs, hesitancy, frequency, weak stream, nocturia, things like that. Where does prostate cancer usually metastasize? Bone. This is so high yield. If you can remember one thing about prostate cancer, I'd probably remember this. So it causes these osteoblastic lesions. So if you can look this up online so you can get a feel for it, what it would look like on a scan, this will look different. And they might throw that scan at you and kind of expect you to understand. So these show up as sclerotic areas on imaging and are associated with an elevated alkaline phosphatase. Obviously, if the patient has mets, you can expect back pain. So that might be how it's presented in a vignette. Do you know how prostate cancer reaches the spine? This is also extremely high yield. Good. So it spreads through the Batson vertebral venous plexus. This is also called the spinal veins. This is which connect this connects the pelvic veins to the vertebral bodies. So this allows for direct valveless venous spread to the spine, and valveless is also something important to know. Moving just along, we're going to hit up testicular tumors. So what's the most common type of testicular tumor overall? Good, germ cell tumors. So let's break down these subtypes. So first we have a seminoma. This is a malignant but radiosensitive tumor and has a good prognosis. Histologically, we're going to see large cells with a clear cytoplasm, and they often call them fried egg appearance. You might see an elevated beta HCG. Next, we have the yolk sac tumor. This is an endodermal sinus tumor. And do you know what population this is the most common in for testicular tumors? Children, good. All right, so we're going to see an elevated AFP. And then histologically, we might see these Schiller-Duval bodies. So these are glomerulus-like structures. A lot of times, options in answers to a question might just say glomerulus-like structures. So it's good to know kind of what the bodies actually look like. And then we got the choriocarcinoma. So this is highly malignant, and it's known for early hematogenous spread. You would also see elevated beta HCG. And with this, you might see gynecomastia via LH-like action and hyperthyroidism via the TSH receptor cross-reactivity. Moving along, we got the embryonal carcinoma, also aggressive, might see elevated AFP or beta HCG. These are often part of a mixed tumor. And then now we're going to teratoma. So, can you actually tell me whether or not teratoma in men presents aggressive or not aggressive? Good, aggressive, yeah. So it's a malignant tumor in men, unlike in females usually. So I would definitely be familiar what this tumor looks like, maybe a cross section of it, because I feel like it's pretty high yield. I've seen quite a few practice questions that have pictures of this, and you should be able to recognize it. Then we're going on to Leydig cell tumors. So these produce androgens, makes sense. They cause precocious puberty in boys or gynecomastia in men. And then lastly, guys, Sertoli cell tumors. So usually silent, rarely do you see hormonal effects. So easy peasy. All right, we are in the home stretch. A few more to discuss before our rapid review. You guys got this. Now we're going to cervical cancer. Do you guys happen to know what the most common type of cervical cancer is? Squamous cell, good job. So, the most common cause is from a persistent HPV infection, especially the type 16 and 18. So, 16, 18 will come back again and again. So, definitely store those in your brain. Risk factors include early onset of sexual activity, multiple sexual partners, smoking, and immunosuppression. The precursor lesion, do you guys happen to know the name of that? Yes, CIN, cervical intraepithelial neoplasia. Good job. All right, now we're going to talk about ovarian cancer. There's something interesting about this that we'll touch on in a little bit, but what's the most common malignant ovarian tumor? Okay, if you got this, you deserve a gold star. This is the serous cystoadenocarcinoma. So this is a complex cyst and is a type of surface epithelial tumor. Do you guys happen to know the other major surface epithelial type? Mucinous tumor, good. So I would maybe like look up a histological picture of these guys because they look quite different, but this would be probably for more in-house exam over step. I haven't really seen too many questions regarding this. What's the most sec the most common second type of ovarian cancer? Yes, germ cell tumors. And this is the interesting thing I was talking about earlier. So when we were talking about the testicular tumors, we said that germ cell were the most common. So this is a contrast to ovarian cancer, which germ cell are the second most common. I don't know if you'll be tested on this, but it's just interesting to note. Which genetic mutations are associated with increased ovarian cancer risk? Good. BRCA1 is the strongest link, yes. And also two, but mostly one. So I would remember one. Which other condition increases risk? Or I guess what other conditions increase risk? Yes. More ovulatory cycles. So think nulliparity, early menarche, and late menopause. Oral contraceptives, pregnancy, and breastfeeding are also considered protective against ovarian cancer. And that makes sense if you think about hormones and whatnot. All right, endometrial cancer. I kind of am about to give this away, but hey, free points. What's the most common gynecologic cancer in the US? Yes, endometrial cancer. Good job. What is the biggest risk factor? Unopposed estrogen. Yes. So you need that progesterone to balance out that estrogen. If you do not, hyperplasia. What's a key cause of that unopposed estrogen? Obesity. So I think the science behind this is actually really interesting. Adipose tissue, we know, converts androgens to estrogen, aromatase, leading to prolonged estrogen stimulation without that progesterone balance, like I said. Other risk factors include anovulatory cycles, hormone replacement therapy without progesterone, which I hope they wouldn't do, early menarche and late menopause, and nulliparity. Do you guys know this is very high yield, the classic presentation of endometrial cancer? Postmenopausal bleeding. Good work. All right, guys, we did it. We went over all those genitourinary different syndromes, and now we're gonna do a rapid fire recap. All right, what's the most common renal cancer in adults? Renal cell carcinoma, specifically clear cell. Good work. What paraneoplastic syndrome is RCC known for? Increased EPO, polycythemia. Good work. What's the most common renal tumor in kids? Wilms tumor. Nice. What syndromes are associated with this? Wagner and Beckwith-Wiedemann. What's the most common bladder cancer in the US? Urothelial carcinoma. What's the biggest risk factor? Smoking, nice. What bladder cancer is linked to chronic irritation? Squamous cell carcinoma. What's the most common prostate cancer type? Adenocarcinoma. And where does this cancer typically metastasize? Bones, think those osteoblastic lesions. What's the most common testicular tumor? Excellent, germ cell tumor. Which testicular tumor shows increased AFP? This is very high yield. Good, yolk sac tumor. Which testicular tumor shows elevated beta HCG and spreads early on in a hematogenous fashion? Good, choriocarcinoma. Which is malignant in men but not in women? We have our teratoma. What's the most common cervical cancer type? Squamous cell carcinoma. Good job. And lastly, but not least, what's the biggest risk factor for endometrial cancer? Unopposed estrogen. Good job, guys. So that sums up our rapid review. Real quick, I would like to present two different case vignettes for you guys. So starting with the first one. A 65-year-old man with a smoking history has painless hematuria. Cystoscopy shows a bladder mass. What is the likely pathogenesis? So we got our schistosoma causing squamous metaplasia. You got your urachal remnant leading to glandular metaplasia. We have our field defect leading to our multifocal urothelial transformation. And we finally have our prostatic gland growth in the transitional zone. So, what option do you think is the best choice? C, good work. So, field defect leading to that multifocal urothelial transformation. All right, for our last vignette, a man with prostate cancer has back pain and sclerotic bone mets. Through what did the cancer spread? A, the azygos vein. B, the Batson plexus. C, the portal vein, or D, the pulmonary vein. I'll let you think about this for a second. And the answer is B, the Batson plexus. So that finishes up the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe to our podcast. If you have any questions or comments, visit spoonfulofsugar.org and post them under this episode. Good luck studying, and remember that if you ever have an SOS moment while studying, Spoonful of Sugar is always here to help the medicine go down.